This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. And you're with Joy the Priest.
And Bertie the Pom.
And we send our love out to Peter the Poof. Not Peter the Poof, we've got Peter the Panellist. I'm getting so confused with these P's.
Well, Andy's Peter the Poof, so we've got...
We've got Andrew the Poof, who's got man flu.
Yeah, we've decided he's got man flu.
I'll send you a tin of chicken soup in the mail, darling. Bertie, what have we got on tonight?
Hey, a packed programme. We have lots of things. We're talking to two writers. One is a playwright and one is an author. So we're talking to Brett Cardy. This is a really unusual name. I've got to ask him where that comes from. Brett Cardy Ingram, who is the writer of the play Manacle, which opens later on this week in
Melbourne. And we're talking to John McNamara, who plays Manny in the play.
Yes, he's with him too, one of the lead actors, so that's going to be great. And we've got Dr... I think he's Reverend Doctor.
Reverend Doctor, yes.
Yeah, Reverend Doctor Stephen Ogden, who's going to be on the phone to us from Brisbane and talking about his new book, which launches very soon, called Love Upside Down.
And we're also going to feature, this is a new thing, an inspirational genre musician who's got a new album out. And tonight her name is Mandisa, and we're going to talk about her and play a few tracks by her. But we want to start by having a little... Send in a little word to Archbishop Peter Jensen, who's off our Christmas list again.
Why don't you tell our listeners what he's been saying?
Oh, well, yes, exactly. He decides... These people are strange, aren't they? They decide to make comment on same-sex relationships. And the Archbishop has warned his church's followers, get this, that if they legalise same-sex marriage, it will lead to polygamy and incest. Really, I ask you.
You know, ensuring public honour of same-sex relationships by calling them marriages is an abuse of marriage itself. Well, I'm sorry, matey, but a person who's been civil partnershiped...
Sounds I've been holy unioned.
See, that's a new verb.
And you've been civil partnershiped.
Then I think, Mr. Peter Jensen, you are totally misinformed and misguided because, you know, it's not... and that's the whole point, is that actually us lucky people who've been allowed to formalise our relationship, you know, we're not calling it marriage. Actually, in the eyes of the law, it's, you know, a civil partnership. It's a civil marriage, but the word marriage is not really used. And I think he's missing the point completely, because the point is not only to formalise your relationship because you found, you know, your soulmate you want to spend the rest of your life with, but it's also about equal rights.
But I think also it's about tradition. He talks about being a traditionalist, and traditions change. Polygamy used to be okay.
Yes.
You know, and traditions changed, and now it's not. So why can't tradition change again? And the fact that these churches are dying because they're hanging on to all these old traditions.
I know.
And they're not up with the fact that things change.
Yep.
Get with it, Peter. Really.
I was just going to say, I find it interesting because the founder of the Church of England actually did have 8 wives. And
but what century was that, though? I mean, that was okay in those days.
And he was a person who comes from a tradition that was started by a man with 8 wives and says, I can't just have one husband.
Yeah. But and also, currently, though, I think in some of the Middle Eastern countries, the Arab men can have more than one wife, can't they?
Well,
they still do.
You know, there is a lot of people within the gay and lesbian community that have more than one partner. They live in groups of 3 or 4, and for them it works.
Yep.
Now, I'm in a monogamous relationship. That works for me.
Yep, me too.
But I am not going to sit in judgment on someone whose relationship works differently.
Yep. And there are many people who you know, legally, in many religions, legally, you can only be married to one person, but it doesn't mean that you're necessarily monogamous. You may have relationships and sleep with other people.
Yeah. But so, do you, Archbishop Peter Jensen, wake up?
Wake up and smell the coffee, honey, exactly. Because it's the 21st century.
Yeah. Now, we're going to start by talking about our feature artist, and her name is Mandisa. I love that name. Mandisa. She's an American gospel singer, and she grew up singing in church. Mm. A lot of them do, don't they? But she actually studied vocal jazz and then graduated with a bachelor degree in music with a concentration on vocal performance. She did session work as a backup singer for a variety of artists, including Sandy Patty and Shania Twain.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was on season 5 of Australian Idol in 2006.
American Idol.
American Idol, sorry.
Do you know, I was trying to remember, but she finished 9th, didn't she?
I'm
trying to remember if I can remember her.
Apparently she was quite a big girl. Because Simon Cowley, I was looking at one of the YouTube clips of her audition, was very rude about her size, as he is. He's a horrible man.
Oh, well, he's rude to everyone.
Anyway, she's done well because after Australian Idol, she was signed up by Sparrow Records, and her debut album was called True Beauty. And her she's just put another one out, which is called What If We Were Real. And that's her 4th album. Interesting title.
What If We Were Real.
Yeah.
But she's done really well, hasn't she? Finished 9th place in American Idol, and she's now released 4 albums.
Exactly.
So you can do it in the US, can't you?
And she's been nominated for Grammy Awards and all sorts of things.
So we're going to hear a track?
So we're going to hear the new single off the album, which is called Stronger. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
We seem to have a little technical difficulty.
We have
with
a technical hitch with the iPod.
These things happen.
We'll try again. Do we want to play a different track, perhaps?
Have we got Julia Fordham? This is your track, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now, Julia Fordham is a wonderful British singer. She hasn't done much lately, I don't think. But in her heyday, I was very, very, very keen on her music. And this is actually a beautiful track, which I just played again today. Haven't heard it for a very, very long time. And it's called Hope, Prayer and Time. So enjoy this track and we'll try and fix the technical problems.
As long as we have hope, prayer, and a little bit of time to get us there. Hope.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Joy and Bertie. And if you want to take part in our conversation, you can SMS us at 0427-JOY949, or you can ring Robert on the desk on 1300-JOY949, or email on air at joy.org.au. And don't forget, if you join up or renew your membership until the end of June, you can go in the draw for those wonderful prizes. Bertie, we've got some guests with us.
We do. We have a packed studio this evening, and a very, very warm welcome to two lovely gentlemen sitting to my right. I would like to introduce Brett Cardy Ingram, who is a writer and producer, and his leading man, John McNamara, who is in Brett's latest play. Now, I know you're Brett, but your name is Brett Cardy. I have to just ask you, where did that name come from?
It's a family thing. Yeah. I think it comes from one of my grandmother's surname being Cardy, and all the male members of my family have, like, my father's name's Ralph Cardy.
I see.
Yeah, it's a bit annoying. But the only reason why I use it on paper is because it looks more interesting than just Brett.
Well, it certainly does.
But I never introduced myself as Brett Cardy because it makes me sound like a prat.
Now, you've written several plays, and I think you're getting a bit of a reputation for tackling quite gritty issues. Now, your new play is called Manacle. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, Manacle, I don't know, it's a rebellion piece. It's in the same context of an old Irish song, really. And it's just, it starts off with, because I was, as a young boy, quite religious.
Mm-hmm.
Both my parents are atheists, and my father pretty much would froth at the mouth if he even said God. Mm-hmm. And so when I converted to Catholicism on my own steam, I was in a lot of trouble.
What age were you when you...
The idea got into my head when I was about 11, and I got it done when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, had to go to church every week and whatnot. And
mm-hmm.
But, you know, I ended up going to a really posh Catholic school on a scholarship, so...
Well done.
As a result.
Did your parents change their view at that stage?
Oh, not really. I mean, it was more my dad that's really anti-religion. I don't think he's so much anti the concept of Jesus or anything like that. Mm. It's just he said to me when he yelled at me about it, that 3/4 of the bloodshed in the entire history of the Western world can be put at the door of the Catholic Church, and like tried to make me feel immoral for my decision.
I think that's a bit incorrect in terms of only the Catholics, isn't it? I mean, yes, I would agree.
I would say religion overall.
Yes, most of the unrest in the world is due to religion per se. Yeah. Perhaps not all the Catholics, poor things.
But interestingly, though, I've gone closer to my father's viewpoint in the sense that this is I'm talking about right wing. Born again Christianity, not specifically Christianity, born again Christianity as such, but the right side of that ideology and the things that you see, especially like what's happening in America, like with those people that have those signs out, you know, saying what they say and turning up at people's funerals, and you know, really, really, that real full-on level of hatred and stuff like that, and the whole twisting of the whole message of Jesus, and it really, really destroys me inside, and sort of like, in a way, my ability to believe has been severely harmed. And so I can only respect Jesus as a figure of humanity now rather than a deity of any kind.
Now, your play is described by one... probably journalist, saying Manacor is about belief and identity and the chains that bind us. It explores the reality behind mental illness, religious corruption, and corporate duplicity. Heavy.
I know, it's pretty full on.
Give me
goes for an hour. I just
Do you serve wine with it? Or?
I recommend being a little bit drunk before you come.
It sounds fabulous.
Give us a snapshot of what this is about. What are you tackling here?
If you want to have a snapshot, why can't I have Johnny do a snapshot as an actor?
Yeah. Come on then, John. You're sitting there very quiet.
Yeah, great. So this is Brett's written a couple of sort of really interesting monologues about Manny's particular perspective on religion, and I suppose the religion that's been really forced down his throat by his father and his sort of dogmatic way of life. So this is Manny's perspective on his Jesus Christ. The man I know as Jesus was not a man claiming to be the Son of God, but the Son of Man. A religious leader fighting a political campaign, preparing the way for armed revolt to drive the Romans from the land of Judea. Who was rightful heir by birth and blood, he was not trying, nor could he ever imagine a new belief would arise from his teachings. He was a devout Jew, a rabbi, who by law was required to wed to maintain his religious position, and his wife, Mary, not a whore, but his companion, as a wife was called then. It was Mary who was meant to carry the message after Jesus' death, and Jesus' brother James was to lead the apostles. But James was executed, finally succumbing to the cruel whim of the Caesars. It was James who failed to kill the impostor Saul, who hid behind his cunning and new name that was meant to have rendered him reborn, but he never met Jesus. So instead of Mary assuming the role of teacher, instead of James leading, Peter, the coward and betrayer, stole God from history and our consciousness. Peter. Jesus was not part of a religious revolution. He had no need of popes and bishops. Peter took the crown of thorns and with spiritual alchemy turned those thorns into a crown of gold, and with his staff he cut God off from all of us. See, in your church you promote wealth as a holy thing despite what is clearly written in the testaments, and you manage to get away with it as if Jesus never said a thing. But what can you expect from a cult that worships torture and death with an erotic God nailed to 2 cuts of wood?
Wow, that's fabulous.
It's a bit angrier on stage.
Oh, I think that's wonderful.
Beautifully read. You have a lovely voice, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You almost need to hand out a script at the end of it, because there's so much in that you could actually talk about and, you know, go out to, and I'm always on about wine, aren't I, really? But I do love it. Go out for a drink of coffee afterwards. And I just think that's wonderful.
It's so... multi-layered.
Yeah.
I think, you know, on the first read we went, yeah, that's great. The second read and the third read, and, you know, really going over it, you know, deeper and deeper during rehearsals, you just find all the layers and all the duplicity that, you know, Brett's kind of put in there. It's really subtle, and it's been really sort of exciting to explore in rehearsals.
Yeah.
I think it's going to provoke a lot of thought after people have seen the play, for sure.
Yeah, it's not just about revolution. Like, the other side of his character is he's trying to take revenge against what he sees as an unjust society, and it tackles the issues of what's going on in Australia today with this almost... Can I just say police state out of laziness, and just like the way that you walked around nowadays, and there's a law for almost everything. If you park your car, you get a fine, and all those things where basically everything you do, there seems to be some sort of government agency of some kind waiting for you when you get there and stuff, and he rebels against that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a subject that really fascinates me, because it really angers me that a lot of the civil rights that were once our God-given are no longer there, and no one said a thing.
Would it be fair to say that a lot of your writing does come out of the sense of injustice and anger?
You could call all my plays morally based, but some people would say that my morals are really skewed. So,
now, when does Manacle open?
Next Wednesday, or this Wednesday,
this coming Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay, and where?
At La Mama Theatre.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Faraday Street in Carlton.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And it's a fabulous venue, isn't it?
It's unreal. Yeah, yeah. All my life, I've never actually had a play on there, but I've always, always wanted to. And for a long time, I never submitted scripts there. I don't know why, actually. It was really stupid. And the one time that I was brave enough to submit it to them, they accepted. I was like, oh, my God, maybe they could have accepted all the others. It's been my dream since I was 20 to have a play there.
So it's running for about 10 nights or something, isn't it?
Yeah, 10 nights, Wednesday to Sunday.
So people can book by ringing 9347 6142,
or you can check out lamama.com.au.
Excellent. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, good luck, guys. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Good night.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge every Monday night from 9 till 10 on Joy 94.9. And you've got the Priestie and the Pommy and the panellist, but the Poff has got man flu. Andrew, darling, if you're listening, I hope you get better.
We love you, darling.
We miss you. Now, what are we doing next?
You're going to tell us who was singing.
Oh, yes, because we had a technical... Well, I've just had a brain hitch, but we also had a technical hitch earlier, and we couldn't get the iPod to work. But that was Mandisa and her new song called Stronger, and this is the inspirational singer that Joy the Priest has brought in tonight. And she sounds really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I love her voice.
That's cool. And is that from her new album?
Yeah, it is.
I like it.
Yeah.
And if we can, we're going to fit in a couple more tracks.
And you can get it from iTunes, of course.
Hey, wonderful.
Yeah. And listen, those last two guys that were in here were fabulous. So get along to see that play, Manacle. We're all going to race along to see it. And just to remind you, it's on at La Mama from the 8th to 26th of June, and the number is 9347 6142.
15th.
So, it's
this Wednesday, 15th.
Yeah, it's 15th, sorry. So get along and have a look at it. It sounds really good.
Mm. And it's only an hour.
Yeah.
I think it's quite an intense hour.
I would think so. I went to a dance that was meant to be a spiritual dance, and it was 50 minutes, and after 5 minutes, I lost the plot.
You'd lost the beat.
I did not have a clue what it was on. So this will
be a lot. Hi, I'm Kylie Minogue, also known as Kylie from Camberwell, and I'm a proud Joy member, number 285.
And you're on Spirit Lounge with Joy and Bertie. And we have another guest now. Reverend Dr. Stephen Ogden is Principal of St. Francis Anglican Theological College. He's also the Executive Director of the Ministry Education Commission in Brisbane, an Academic Associate with Charles Sturt University, and formerly Dean of St. Paul Peter's Cathedral in Adelaide. But he's actually here to tell us about his latest book, which has the interesting title of Love Upside Down. Welcome to Spirit Lounge.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Did I read that, you know, get that, all the title right?
And I think so. I was sitting here going, who is that guy?
You should introduce yourself to him after the program.
I think Royal Highness might be simpler, but Stephen will do.
I'm sorry, it's Queen's birthday, not yours. Stephen, I was just wondering if you could just tell us briefly, what is Love Upside Down about?
Well, look, it's really about spirituality. It's a spirituality of love. I think religion's quite simple, really. That the best of it, it's about love and diversity. It's a passionate love that embraces everyone, wants to build people's lives up. But the problem is that people and institutions get in the way. So in some ways I'm reintroducing the theme of love, and using this theme I'm exploring some major social issues, three in particular: violence against women, the exploitation of the environment, and probably the main chapter is the church's treatment of the LGBT community.
Wow.
Is that a good summary? Was that enough? I can say more.
No, that sounds very good.
Just.
The subtitle, might I say, is Life, Love, and the Subversus, Jesus, which I love.
Yeah, and I think, too, one of the interesting things that's happened in recent years, actually mainly through feminist scholarship in the United States, is we've rediscovered the kind of early Jesus and the movement that he was part of, which included these feisty women. And once again, it reinforces this principle of a compassionate, inclusive, and generous love. So, in a way, some of that scholarship is calling people like me and the church to task, which is a good thing.
It's not actually a new idea, though, is it? This idea of a subversus Jesus, and that was the reason that he actually died.
Yeah, no. It's been there a long time, but it kind of got lost at a number of levels. The kind of meek and mild Jesus that most people have in their minds, or the Jesus that's encrusted by dogma and ritual. But there's no doubt he was killed because he was subversive, and he was perceived at some level as a threat by the Roman Empire. And in fact, his method of crucifixion was standard for traitors or threats to the empire. But you're right, it's an old theme, but in perhaps the last 10 or 20 years, the theme's been reclaimed by a whole range of groups across the globe, and I think taken passionately now, which is great.
Yeah, I certainly think for people from our community that why would you follow a Jesus in the old style?
Oh, yeah, God forbid.
Yeah. I mean, we've been told that, you know, what is it? Love the sinner, sin and not the sinner.
Oh, no,
you know, and Jesus died for our sins, and therefore we should be all straight and happy.
Mm-hmm. And really, that Jesus is more a kind of a 19th century creation that was used to control and manipulate people. It's offensive and violent, and violent to a lot of communities, violent to a lot of groups. And I think it's important to name that, you know, to reject that kind of cardboard cutout Jesus, and to reclaim this sort of feisty Jesus who wasn't a solo act. He was part of a really interesting community of people that included people like Mary Magdalene, and they had this sense of the love of God as being generous and inclusive. The only problem was that the church became successful, and we began to institutionalise the whole thing.
Hmm. Steve, it's Bertie here, the POM. Good evening.
Good evening.
Now, I haven't had time to read your book, sadly.
That's okay.
The priestie just brought it into the show tonight. But you mentioned it's interesting because on many of our previous programmes and other programmes that I've been on, we've discussed the challenges in the world today. And what you've mentioned in your book is violence against women, the fact we're trashing the environment, and the issues with the LGBTI community. I mean, those are just three of many, many big global issues at the moment. How did you choose those three in particular, and how do you connect those three in your book?
Now, good question. I guess partly, I mean, there are good intellectual reasons for choosing those kind of things, but really, you know, I've got some personal connections at one level or another with all those aspects. And I think really when you're trying to write in a popular style, it's got to come from the heart. I mean, you want to do your homework and you want it to be have some substance. But it has to come from the heart. And I think the key factor is, if I can just take the chapter on women, I wasn't trying to write it as a feminist. I think there's nothing worse than the bloke who tries to be more feminist than the feminists. But I think it's a cliche to say that many of the problems in the world are because straight blokes like me, we run the world, really. And, you know, in terms of power, the use and abuse of power and violence. And so I've tried to, in a sense, to look at these three chapters and say, now, what, for example, with the chapter on women, what is it about blokes like me that we become threatened with difference. And that's the key, that people in power are usually threatened by those who are different. In that chapter that I mentioned before, it's women. I mean, for a century or two in this country, the environment was seen as a threat or the enemy that had to be conquered. And also with the gay and lesbian community within the church, because those members of the church were seen as different, they were seen as a threat. So at one level, you could pick a whole range of issues, but I've had some personal connection with all those.
Mm-hmm.
And the key theme is, you know, for us to learn how to deal with difference. And rather, you know, for me, the Jesus stuff, the uh-huh. subversive Jesus stuff is about, hey, difference is good. Let's celebrate and honour differences. Let's have a party about it. Hence the importance of the theme of the banquet.
Uh-huh.
So, did that make it any clearer?
Yes, it does. It does, yeah. Thank you.
My one frustration with the book, though, is that every chapter seemed to me to have so many ideas that I wanted to see you develop further. And I kept on thinking, oh, I'd like to, you know, hear more about that. So is there any chance that you're actually going to write again? Or
sequel.
I mean, each chapter could be a book, really,
well,
couldn't
it? It's funny you should say that, because I was going to do some really spacey, abstract, philosophical thing, which is now in the dustbin. But can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
Well, I did we went on a big holiday around the world, and I did a book launch in Toronto, and there were I know I'm boasting there, but there were 9 people in attendance, including the 2 people that owned the bookshop. And as I was telling the story, at the end of it, a young Vietnamese girl came up to me, and she grabbed me by the arm, and she was in tears, and she thanked me, and I was, you know, a bit surprised, but she said that she'd just come out recently, and she had fundamentalist Christian parents who had completely rejected her, and she'd found hope in this book, and that now she was going to race home with the book and read it with her partner and try and incorporate and claim for her own sake the spiritual in her life. And we then had a fantastic discussion about the 21st century and the complexity of human relationships and the diversity of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really that discussion that says, goodness me, the book I've done, chapter 6 in the book, about the church's treatment of LGBT community, it raises all sorts of issues about all sorts of relationships. So yes, I sort of whet your appetite, and yes, I am going to write a much bigger book about, I haven't come up with the right title yet, but about the complexities of human relationships, and that in my view, God wants to bless the whole lot, really. You know
yeah.
what I mean? That, you know, I think that there are elderly people now who are completely marginalised in our culture who constitute families. Why aren't we blessing them?
Mm. Yes, there's certainly a lot more that could be covered. And yes, but where do you stop? We've got to go now, Stephen, but I would just want to announce that there's a book launch on Friday the 24th of June, 6:30 at Readings Carlton, which is 309 Lygon Street, Carlton. It's free, and apparently you have no need to book.
No, we'd love to see you there.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
bye. And you're on Spirit Lounge with Bertie and Joy. To Terry, who's stuck in the Western Ring Road eastbound. Oh, darling, just take a deep breath. We're here for you and we're thinking of you. I won't say what you said about the traffic. Anyway, if you find out why you're stuck, don't forget to SMS us. But keep listening and just take those deep breaths every now and again, because now you're actually going to hear about how to boost your immune system.
You are in a minute, but I just, because we brought Van the Man in a bit quick there, didn't we? That was the beautiful Van Morrison, and Have I Told You Lately? And that is a personal request by me to my gorgeous lover, Anne, who is back in the UK. She's sitting in traffic on the M25.
Do you think she's listening?
She is. She's got her iPad on. Darling, I love you. I miss you. Come back soon. And I hope you get to Longleat, which is where they're going in southwest of England. So hello, everyone in England who's listening. Now it's time to take your clothes off and
please,
jump into the
cold
spa. Well, we're talking about cold. And how many times when you were young did your mum say to you, put a jacket on, put a scarf on, you'll catch a chill, it's cold out there. And, you know, were our parents right?
No.
Do we get colds in cold weather? This is the question. Because researchers who've been studying this question think that normal exposure to moderate cold does not increase our susceptibility to infection, and it's all a load of old codswallop. And in fact, this was really making me laugh, and I've included it because I was reading doing some research, as we do, and these health experts agree that the reason winter is cold and flu season is not that people are cold, but because we spend more time indoors and we crank the heating up and we're with lots of other people and we pass each other our germs. And that's why we get colds and flu. It's not because it's cold outside. Or maybe
but
it is because
someone's got to get the germ in the first place to pass it.
And I wonder who the first person is to get it. I think it just goes around the world all the time,
should
though, doesn't
it? Should we
blame Andrew? Andrew, it's all your fault. But it's lovely because scientists have done all sorts of experiments and they've dunked people into cold water and they've made people sit nude outside in freezing temperatures. Do you think they get paid to do that?
I would hope so.
They've studied people living in the Antarctic and people on expeditions to Mount Everest. And it's only in really extreme cases that anything was found. And in fact, it was the competitive cross-country skiers who got upper respiratory infections because they were exercising so vigorously in sub-zero temperatures. They were kind of wrecking their kind of esophagus and their lungs because they were just trying to breathe this cold air in too fast. And that's the only thing they could find that really says, you know, that's extreme cold can make you ill. But so what we're talking about tonight is how do we boost our, now that we're going into winter? Mind you, the last 3 days, look at the weather.
Oh, I know.
Wow. But we are talking about how to boost our immune system during the winter to protect ourselves. And so I've spotted a few things. Now, this might be glaringly obvious, but we'll just go through it. Vitamin C. There's nothing wrong with vitamin C. It supports and stimulates the immune system because it increases production of infection-fighting white blood cells and antibodies. It is a very powerful antioxidant. And so how do we get vitamin C? Orange and grapefruit juice are the best citrus drinks to take. Sweet red pepper, really high in vitamin C.
That's surprising.
Yeah, sweet red bell peppers. Strawberries, sprouts, broccoli, cabbage. And tomatoes. That's your vitamin C. Vitamin E is the other antioxidant and immune booster. It stimulates the production of B cells that produce antibodies to destroy bacteria. So vitamin E is really good. Now, you get that from cereals. See, I wonder if porridge, I think porridge might be included in that. Not sure. Cereals, seeds, nuts, olives, olive oil, but also oils and margarines from corn and blueberries.
Blueberries are really blueberries. Good.
I know, but they're very seasonal here. I can't get them at the moment. Or they're like $10 for a punnet.
Oh, you could get frozen ones and they're not quite so nice.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Now, the other fabulous one that you see hand in hand with vitamin C actually is zinc. Because zinc is an essential mineral required by the body for maintaining a sense of smell, keeping a healthy immune system, building proteins. And it great antioxidant, anti-inflammatory. Best source of zinc, guess what? That aphrodisiac, oysters. Yeah, actually, I don't like oysters personally.
I don't like them a la natural too much, but Kilpatrick certainly is.
Well, oysters are very good for zinc. Red meats, including liver, seeds, nuts, and dark chocolate.
That was my one.
So Peter's happy because I've included dark chocolate. That's great for zinc. Now, the other less known one is glutamine. Now, glutamine is an amino acid. Now, translated, that means it's a building block of protein. So again, liver, which we've just talked about. And you see, the immune system requires protein to function properly. So best source really is high-protein foods. So beef, chicken, fish, beans, dairy, cabbage, beetroot, things like that.
I was going to say, I think you can get glutamine tablets, can't you?
You can, yeah. If you don't... Yeah, I mean, and most of what we're talking about, you can take in tablet form. But if you... I've just decided to list some of the foods. So if you
I think if you can have... through food is much better than
is.
The tablets.
Well, it's more enjoyable. Who likes popping pills?
Yeah.
And then my favourite one, because I like wine, milk thistle. This is, of course,
What's
best known...
What's it to do with wine?
Because I saturate my liver with wine most of my life. So best known for its liver cleansing and protecting properties.
Okay.
But it also has antiviral benefits. So milk thistle you do have to take in tablet form. Echinacea, famous one.
Yep.
Great to fight colds and flu. A lot of, again, it increases the activity of white blood cells. A lot of people say with echinacea, if you're feeling coldy, flu-y, then take a lot very quickly for a short spell of time, but don't take it all the time, otherwise your body just gets used to it and becomes immune to it. So excuse the pun. So and I love this one, and Anne, darling, if you are listening, because my darling girl loves licorice, and licorice, this works particularly well with the immune system, especially if you're kind of stressy. So you must only take licorice when you're feeling ill. That's quite funny, really, ill wives' tale. But
yeah,
I just wanted to include
it,
because
I'd like to eat licorice if I was feeling ill.
That'll make Anne feel better about all the licorice she eats. And last but not least, you know, here we go again. In fact, I am going to talk about insomnia one week.
What about sleeping too
much? Sleep is important not only for rest and rejuvenation, but for the immune system. That's when our immune system is replenished and strengthened. And of course, melatonin, which is a natural hormone, is released when darkness falls. It makes us feel sleepy. And as well as helping us with sleep, it's a powerful antioxidant that helps to support the immune system. So melatonin is very important. Good sleep means we help our immune system. So that's what we should be doing to keep those colds and flu away in the winter.
I take melatonin to help me go to sleep.
Yes.
When I'm stressed. Yeah. But they don't sell it in Australia in decent quantities.
You can probably have to get it in the States.
You know, one microgram or whatever it is. So you've got to take five of them.
But your body...
But in the States, if you take... Yeah. You get a tablet, it's five.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous. And it just relaxes you enough to put you to sleep, and you don't get that hangover from sleeping tablets.
No, you just have to be careful how much you take. Yeah, but yeah, your body, as soon as it gets dark, your body does naturally, and when you go to bed, naturally it starts to secrete melatonin, but maybe, if not enough, then that's probably a sleep enhancer. I don't know, not an expert.
Oh, no, I just think it's a fabulous thing.
So there we are. That's how to keep the colds and flu away. Peter looks like he's fallen asleep over there. He's dreaming about dark chocolate.
I think to send Andrew out to buy some vitamin C, some oranges, some echinacea.
Yeah, Andrew, I hope you're listening, darling, because you need to take all of those things. Yep.
That we need. We're going to have another track now from Mandisa. And it's a track, the same title as the album, and it's called What If We Were Real? Just before we finish with another Mandisa track called The Truth About Me, I just want to announce that Melbourne's Freedom to Be monthly meeting is on this Friday, which is 17th of June, 7:15 for the 7:30 start at the Victorian AIDS Council building, 6 Claremont Street, South Yarra. The entrance is at the side of the building. Just ring the doorbell and they'll let you in, no doubt. And it's been a fabulous program. We've run out of time again.
We have. It's been a great show, and I've really enjoyed listening to this lady Mandisa. I'm going to go and download it.
So here's Mandisa again. Good night from us. See you next week.
Goodbye.
If only I could see me as you see me, and understand the way that I am loved, would it give a whole new meaning to my purpose, change the way I see the world? Would I sparkle like a star in the night sky? Would I give a little more instead of take? If I understood I'm precious like a diamond of a worth no one could.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.